Okay, we're going to take more of your phone calls in a moment with Lawrence Joseph, author of the book Solar Cataclysm. In just a moment, I'm going to ask him about that Nicolas Cage movie, Knowing, in a moment. If you've seen it, you know what it's all about. It has to do with the sun, little ET visitations, but that's not the question. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Back with Lawrence Joseph. Lawrence, did you ever see the Nicolas Cage movie, Knowing?
I saw it on an airplane. I remember it pretty well.
Yeah, that's great. It's about solar bursts and things like that.
Yeah.
And that could happen that way.
Well, in the end of the movie, the solar blast incinerates the surface of the Earth.
The whole planet. The entire planet.
That's Hollywood for you. We don't need to be at that level of drama to worry about these things. What I liked about the movie was there's a set of random numbers that predicted cataclysms.
Yes. I love that part.
And life is stranger than fiction. Can I tell you about the strange warnings that the sun has been sending us, the secret warnings?
Please, yeah. Don't hold back.
Okay. The sun is sending us secret warnings via piles of radioactive medical waste. And if that doesn't sound like get out your tinfoil helmet, nothing does, but it's true. Over the last several years, Stanford University and Purdue University researchers have concluded that when a sunspot is about to issue a flare that will hit the Earth, and only when it's going to hit the Earth, radioactive isotopes on our planet decay a little bit more slowly than they're supposed to.
Huh.
And
it's like an early warning system.
Yes. It's like tipping us off that it's going to smack us. And this is even before the sunspot is visible. And it only occurs when that sunspot is going to erupt in such a manner as to hit the Earth.
And this happens prior to the eruption.
Absolutely.
That's weird.
And prior, of course, to any impact for us. And it's they're just trying to figure out how this works because solar neutrinos may be... are what they think are causing it, but neutrinos can't really affect anything. They have no charge and no rest mass, so they've never been known to do anything, and nothing has ever tinkered with the rate of radioactive decay of anything that we know about. I mean, radioactive decay proceeds at its own timetable without any disruption, as far as we've ever known. So there are two impossibilities coming together to make for a very strange phenomenon. That could be incredibly useful for
us. It sure would be. Where would we be able to check this in terms of these events when they occur? I mean, who would have the isotopes or the ability to do this?
Well, one of the isotopes is manganese 54, which is a commonly used in medical diagnostics. So basically the stuff that hospitals pay a lot of money to safely discard could in fact be reused in certain amounts anyway to set up monitoring stations for when we're going to get whacked by a solar event. I love this idea because
it's great.
Yeah.
And how much leeway does it give us?
A couple of days before the eruption, and then there's usually a couple of days between eruption and impact on Earth.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And I don't think NASA likes it very much because...
Why?
Well, NASA's...
Oh, because they spent all this money to have satellites out there.
Right, and as you probably know, the International Heliophysical Year set up to study the sun, 2007-2008, was one of the largest collaborations in scientific history and most expensive, too, and there's a little, you know...
Like a million miles out, right?
Yeah, and there's all these spacecraft orbiting the sun, poking it. You were asking before about what it would be like to touch the sun. We indulge ourselves a little bit. There's actually, I think it is in 2016, we're actually going to have a spacecraft enter and touch the sun's corona for real.
Before it burns up?
Yeah.
Bad chance, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, they're betting that it'll make it through. Those JPL guys are pretty good, but who knows? But still, all this is going on, huge investments of time and energy and money and brain power. And it's right now, none of it stacks up at least to the potential of radioactive waste.
I want to come back to brain power in a second, but let's take some calls as they stack up for you. We'll go to Huntington Beach in California, first time caller. Rod, go ahead.
Hi.
Hi, Roddy.
I read in a magazine in 1994 that Seattle experienced greater depression in the wintertime due to the lack of sun because of where the sun was.
I believe that. Lawrence, did you ever see that article?
Yeah, I followed that story a little bit. It was kind of comical.
How so?
The University of Washington was commissioned to do a study as to why the suicide rate in Seattle was so high. And the only thing that they concluded was that it was not the rain. And I thought, you know, these guys, these folks had a hard time, because if they got paid a couple hundred grand to come back and said it was the rain, they'd be shouted down for picking the obvious choice that you didn't need a PhD to study anyway. So,
I'd love to see a blind study how long it takes people to get whacked out when they don't see the sun. Just keep them in a room somewhere. That's interesting. 2-3 days, 4, a week? What do you think?
If you're alone, it depends on your diversion. If I had a stock refrigerator, a couple of bottles of wine, and Netflix, I might be able to last a couple of weeks.
Netflix. I can never get the movies on that thing. Can you?
Over the Wii, yeah.
I mean, it's difficult. They just never have the good ones. I don't know why. Maybe I bought the wrong subscription package. Let's go to Tom, truck driving in Arizona. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program.
Hi, I just have a quick question about the solar flares. We were talking, I was hearing about the solar flares that could possibly take out our grids here on the ground on our planet. The thing that I have a question about is, could there be one that's not so bad for grids on the ground, but bad enough to take out our communication satellites? Or will there have to be one just as bad?
Well, it's a real good question, because the satellites are obviously, you know, the first line.
And they're out there. Now, are they insulated against some of this?
Yeah. The satellites are better built. They call it hardened.
The new ones.
Yeah. Are just better protected than the transformers on the ground. Of course, if the transformers on the ground go out and the grid goes out, the satellites will be useless because, you know, the places that they report their data to will be unable to receive it. But the satellites are not really in too bad shape. Every now and then, there's a spot over the South Atlantic called the South Atlantic Anomaly, where the Earth's magnetic field is typically weak. Every now and then, a satellite will pass through there and get fried. It was a Danish satellite that Denmark didn't have too many satellites, so that it was a real loss for them. And a Japanese satellite also went through there and got fried. But for the most part, they seem to stand up better than the transformers on the ground.
The Vanguard 1, which has been in orbit 50-plus years, has stopped working, but it's still in orbit.
God bless it.
Can you believe that?
Wow.
But they've got some satellites that have been around for 40-plus years that are still functioning.
That's fantastic.
Next up, let's go to Ricky in Bellflower, California. Ricky, take it away.
Yeah, how's it going?
Good, Ricky.
I was just calling. Yeah, I second the guy's motion. Something was going on. I've been, like, ever since the 30th, like, I caught wind of, like, there were supposed to be, like, the solar flares and whatnot. And I've been having the temperature on my computer and stuff like that, and it's been fluctuating. It went from like 90 to like 87, and back to like 92. It was like crazy. And then for like the past few days, my satellite dish has been cutting in and out.
Really? So, well, if we're not getting hit, Lawrence, by an X flare at this point, and we haven't been. Can these sunspots, and they're two big ones facing us right now, can they affect anything?
I mean,
before discharging anything?
Well,
just by being there.
The conventional answer would be no. But then again, we've just discovered via the Stanford and Purdue researchers that the sun is communicating with us in ways we didn't understand before and affecting, in that case, radioactive decay. So why not? Why couldn't there be some other form of connection and interference radiating from these sunspots that we simply haven't learned yet? I mean, we've just launched dozens of spacecraft, or at least 24 spacecraft, to study the sun and to find out, you know, unravel its mysteries as pertains to the relationship to the Earth. We're going to find out a lot of new stuff. So I wouldn't dismiss the possibility at all.
What about people who are wearing pacemakers and then we get hit by an X-flare? What happens to them?
I don't know. I think in all likelihood, the pacemakers are not hardened or protected in any particular way because it would increase the size and the weight of the pacemaker. So I think they're probably running a risk, but please, if you're listening, you're wearing a pacemaker, don't take that as gospel from me because I don't know. That's just my best guess.
Let's go to Stan in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Stan, go ahead.
Well, hey, George.
Interesting day in Denver, huh?
Oh, yeah, most interesting day in Denver. And I do believe I worked with you a little bit at WDET back in the 80s, early 80s. But I can talk to you about that some other time. Listen, I'd wanted to know, is there any kind of research going on? You know, all the radioactive particles released by Fukushima and with the solar flare activity going on now, and those two bombarding with each other, are they creating any other type of matter that we don't know yet?
What do you think?
I think it's the kind of possibility that we've just spent several billion dollars to discover, to uncover. Really, it's no coincidence that what is one of the two or three greatest scientific collaborations in history, the International Heliophysical Year, has just launched all these spacecraft and dedicated. There's 101 countries participating in this. It's kind of kept quiet because I think they don't want a general sense of alarm to spread. But that's the kind of thing that, whether it's alarming or threatening or not, or just interesting or possibly helpful, what the gentleman brings up, that we will be discovering over the next couple of years. But I have no advanced knowledge. Sorry.
Back to these pacemakers for a second. Maybe they should make them with shields.
Yeah, the difficulty is that the shields tend to be a heavy metal.
Yeah, and these are in the heart, right?
Yeah.
They're not like sitting in your pocket with electrodes in your body.
Right, so, you know, it's a technological challenge, but, you know, people have risen to it before.
Lawrence, take a moment or two. Tell us about your websites and where we can get your works before we go back to more calls.
Well, thank you. My latest book called Solar Cataclysm is published by Harper One, and it should be pretty much every bookstore and certainly on Amazon. My website is lawrenceejoseph.com. I got some fun videos there and stuff to look at in the blog and all like that, and y'all are welcome.
All right, very good. Now, you talk about anthropologists and looking back at our sun, worshiping pop culture. Tell me about that. What do you mean by that?
Well, probably the most successful television show in history.
Baywatch.
Baywatch, which I'll admit to a guilty pleasure of watching every now and then. But that was as sun-worshipping a series as ever did exist. And
you liked it because of the stellar writing.
That's right. That's right. And the cinematography.
That's right.
But, you know, it's we tend to think of going to the beach and lying out in the sun as something that people have always done and a very natural time immemorial thing. But, in fact, it's pretty new. Coco Chanel, the great fashion designer, virtually invented the fashionable tan less than 100 years ago.
Before they just liked people to look pale.
Yeah, and she was on the Duke of Westminster's yacht, and all the aristocrats were, you know, hiding under their veils and their hats
yeah.
in the cabins, and the deckhands were all bronzed, and she thought they looked great, so she took off enough of her clothes and lay out on the deck and delightfully scandalized everybody, which I suppose was her role as a guest anyway. And all of a sudden, the tan caught on because, you know, she was the bee's knees.
I know some delightful people from Japan here in Los Angeles. When they go outside, they will hold an umbrella in a sunny day. Umbrellas. You know, just to create the shade over them.
Well, I
mean, they're very, very sensitive emotionally and maybe physically about the sun.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, unless they have an extreme case, they might could loosen up a little bit and, you know, do some SPF 70 and at least set down the umbrella, but, you know.
How does the sun create a melanoma?
Well, it's back to the darts. The melanoma is...
Does something break through the...
Yeah. Basically, what happens is the genetic mechanism of the melanin cell, which is what creates a tan, gets disrupted, and then the melanin cells spread all around the body.
Because of the sun.
That's their job is to defend against the sun. So the defenders are basically co-opted by the sun to spreading its damage. It's actually quite a bizarre little thing because the sun comes out, melanin cells spread around the body to defend against it. But if the sun happens to corrupt the genetic mechanics of one or more of them, they end up spreading the cancer.
Can you get a melanoma by not being in the sun? I don't know that answer.
I can't imagine how that would work, but I'm...
So you're saying the sun is the catalyst for this?
The sun is certainly far and away the most important cause of that. There may be exceptions that prove the rule that I'm not aware of.
Volcanoes, are they affected by the sun?
There's a brilliant rogue scientist called Dr. Soumitra Mukherjee from New Delhi who thinks that earthquakes and volcanoes are affected by solar activity, particularly when solar blasts hit the earth in areas where there's a lot of metal in the crust. So the crust is particularly susceptible to the energy inputs from solar blasts. He, at this point, Dr. Mukherjee is considered an outsider or hasn't proved his case. But
A rebel. Well, that happens a lot in mainstream scientists. I've interviewed a lot of scientists about Velikovsky, and they hate the guy. He's rolling over in his grave. They hate him so much. Lawrence, we're going to come back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take final phone calls with you. Those of you on hold, just stay where you are. And then we've got several lines open. A wild card line is open, so give us a call. Back in a moment, we'll take all your calls with Lawrence Joseph on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, have you been to the Coast to Coast store yet? You can. Look at all the great brand new items that are there, especially the scrambled eggs officer hat. You'll like that, and the mugs and robes and everything else. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com and look for the store. You'll find it at the top and at the bottom of the homepage. We're going to come back in a moment with Lawrence Joseph, wrap things up with final phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. Lawrence Joseph with us. Lawrence, do we need a small little wake-up call, a little outage somewhere?
We need 1989 all over again.
What would happen?
Well, in 1989, Hydro-Quebec power utility was knocked out for several hours by a solar blast. It smarted, but it didn't really destroy or threaten loss of life.
Why didn't we in the United States wake up after we saw what our neighbors went through?
Well, because A, it was our neighbor, and B, we were less aware of solar consequences back then. The mindset, not even among the scientific community, was not really there. I mean, the explanation was clear, but there was no field of study. There was no sense of possibility. It sort of created one. And then 2003 is when we really should awaken with the Halloween storm. But that hit South Africa, and we didn't care because South Africa is so far away. We need one of those two things to happen again, because now consciousness has been raised among the scientific community and you know, I think more and more among the general public, that this is something that's going to happen and we'd better prepare for it. So one more wake-up call, and I think we can put this matter on a proper footing.
I think so. Okay, let's go to final phone calls here Rick in Palm Coast, Florida, east of the Rockies. Rick, go ahead.
I'm right here.
Here you go.
Yeah, I'm glad to be on.
Thank you.
I think about this sunspots. What are sunspots?
Sunspots are storms on the sun. Basically,
storms.
What happens? What happens is the magnetic lines of force that emanate from the center of the sun get twisted and splinter, creating fissures in the surface of the sun. This often, not always, but often leads to explosions, some of which hit the Earth.
Are they not all thermonuclear explosions?
Yeah, the sun is basically run by the process of thermonuclear fusion, yeah.
Ongoing.
No, the sun's rays, they, as they come, well, at 93 million miles away, they come towards Earth. They have no effect on anything until they hit something, right? You cannot, it doesn't, the rays don't do anything until they hit something.
That's right. If light or other form of radiation is traveling through the void, there's nothing
right.
happening until.
No, I have a theory.
All right, what is that?
Well, we have an enormous number of airplanes flying.
That's right. Too many.
Right? Not only commercial, but air passengers, so on.
Sure.
These planes use tons of fuel. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
All right. Now, as they travel through the air, they leave that debris in the air.
Yeah.
Right. Now, we're talking about global warming. Wouldn't that have an effect on warming our Earth when the sun hits those, whatever comes out of the airplane?
Well, as a matter of fact, it does add to the pollution, man-made gases, some of which are greenhouse gases. And also, it's now believed that there's an impact on the stratospheric ozone layer by the constant penetration of long-distance flights. So that's a possible consequence, too. I don't quite get the relationship to the sun, however, in your theory.
Lawrence, as you look at all of this, what do you see right now as our biggest pressing problem, the grid?
Absolutely. I mean, I've written books. I've examined all sorts of potential catastrophes, and they all don't add up to 1% of protecting the power grid and protecting the civilization that suckles from that precious electricity. We have no way. I mean, people have been through blackouts for a couple of days, even a couple of weeks, but months or years, civilization couldn't take it. And I really think it's preventable. This makes me kind of a Johnny One Note, and I'm sorry if I appear that way, but it all pales compared to that potential catastrophe, and we can prevent that catastrophe. We know what to do. We have the money. We have the technology. We have all we need is the will. And that's why I'm grateful to be on this show, because more people hear about this, I think the stronger our will be.
I have no doubt about that. Let's go to Rodney in Hampton, Virginia. Thanks for calling, Rodney, and good morning.
Good morning, George. Calling about Velikovsky's theory.
Okay.
You mentioned that earlier. Of course, this is the 3,600-year period city of the return of Nibiru, Planet X. I'm watching a digital disruption of local antenna broadcasts, and this is corresponding quite nicely with the disruptions and the magnetic sun interference on South Pole. And I was wondering what kind of calculations you have on the probabilities of this Velikovsky theory being relatively true and correct.
I liked Velikovsky's theories. Lawrence, I don't know if you looked much into that, but...
Not really.
I
have something to say about Nibiru, but please continue.
You know, that Venus being a captured comet, that's an interesting theory, but overall, I think Velikovsky was spot on. I do. Hey, thanks for your call. Appreciate it. Let's take a few more. Jeremy in Longview, Texas, first-time caller. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Good morning.
Hey.
First, I want to say, I've been listening to you since I was about 16 years old, man. I love your show.
Well, thank you for hanging in so long.
No problem. I've only gotten a couple of the last few minutes to your show this morning. Of course, I'm trying to drive, so I'm sorry if I'm cutting in and out for anything. But I was just wanting to know, and I'll take my question off there, but I wanted to know, what would I do in this particular case if this were to happen in order to protect my family?
Well, that's a great question. I get asked it a lot. Right now, you can start by preparing a family emergency plan. Just figuring out who's part of the group and what you're going to do. Where are you going to meet? What are you going to do if telecom goes down? Where will you meet? What will be the prearranged place? Who's responsible for what? Who's responsible for making sure that there's clean water? Who's in charge of medicine? Who's in charge of the kids? Just get it together. I live on a cul-de-sac in Los Angeles, and I've talked to some of my neighbors about just the emergency preparedness and disaster and what we'd do if we got cut off. And it's a casual conversation, sort of backyard fence kind of thing, but we've begun to work on that. Another thing you could do is go off grid, go solar and have your backup plan prepared. Going solar is a helpful but not sufficient thing to do, because the inverters, which are basically what convert the solar energy into electricity, are vulnerable to the same sort of solar blast of that'll take out the electrical power grid. So if you go solar, make sure your inverter is hardened or caged or protected, whatever word you want to use. Just make sure that thing is covered with some heavy metal that will repel the plasma coming in. So two things. One, make a family emergency plan. Two, think about going off grid.
Ron is truck driving in California. Hey, Ron, go ahead. You're on with us.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Good, Ronnie.
Hey, Sunday night, I think you had George Knapp on.
Uh-huh.
And they had got a report that the sun was acting up. And then your other guest to come on, Mitch, I forget his last name, but Mitch.
Mitch Batras.
Yeah, Mitch came on and he said he didn't hear nothing about it. He would check into it, but something was happening on Sunday where they had to actually send out some warnings went out on about the sun on Sunday.
You know what, Lawrence? I didn't see anything about that at all either.
No.
Did you?
No, I
don't know. I don't know if they were on or not in terms of being accurate.
Best way to stay on top of that is spaceweather.com.
I
love that website.
They're very good at that. And we go also to earthchanges.com. And, we just stay, you got to stay abreast of this stuff.
Yep.
Hartford, Connecticut, Alan Stern on Coast to Coast. Hey, Alan, thank you for calling.
Well, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Fellas, my question is this, is that I'm very soon going to be installing a home solar system on my house,
Right. Obviously.
And I've been investigating, trying to protect myself from what you're talking about, and also that possibility of, nuclear-induced pulses, intentional pulses. I'm interested in Lawrence's comment on Faraday cages, and specifically Faraday cages around the outboard equipment that would go in my cellar, the panels that would go on the roof of the house. And lastly, Lawrence, is my information off the internet tells me that I should not have a system that is plugged in. In other words, I should go completely off the grid.
Off the grid, totally.
If I want to protect myself from some kind of feedback coming at me from the street.
Well, that's a judgment call. Going off grid entirely is certainly the safest way to do it regarding potential solar impacts, but you might want to risk it for the other benefits of being able to feed back into the grid and get paid for that, and also having the grid as a backup in case something happens to your system. That's a personal judgment call. How much risk are you willing to bear? The Faraday cages sound good for
and explain what a Faraday cage is for somebody who might not know, Lawrence.
Sure. It's basically it's a metal box
that protects electronic components inside of it from this sort of disruption.
Would you go inside one of these boxes as a person?
No. I mean, it's certainly analogous to the little box of the space station where the astronauts go during solar storms, but normally Faraday cages are just, you know, small. I can't see the rationale for making one so large that one could hide in it, because bodily harm directly from these blasts is not one of the things that you really have to worry about. Faraday cages around the panels, I've never heard about that. Not to say that I just don't see how it would work, because the panels need to be exposed, and a Faraday cage or any other sort of protective metal sheathing would hide them from the sun.
Let's go to Joy in Costa Mesa, California. Hey, Joy, go ahead.
Hi, this is K6JOY, your daily solar weather gal.
There you are.
I report on this stuff every morning for the 40-meter Aries Races Net.
Good for you.
About 2 years ago, the world's largest, strongest solar flare was recorded as an X-29, which was not Earth-directed.
That's right. Went off the side, didn't
which
it?
Which shows that the potential for significant damage is in the sun.
Amen to that.
Amen to that. I went to my city council and prepared a presentation with graphics and everything, trying to encourage them to harden our police and fire department with a second set of communication devices sealed in Faraday cages and staged strategically throughout the city.
Joy, what do you think would have happened had that X-29 hit us directly?
Oh, baby, that would have been a kill shot.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That Dames would have been right.
Well, when you think that the Carrington event was like only an M3.
That was back in the 1800s, right? Yeah.
I mean, it's just a drop in the bucket compared to an X-29.
Oh, my gosh.
Come on. And you know, the velocity of that X-29 was rated at millions of miles per hour at the speed of light.
Well, and you're right. The sun is capable of doing this. We just lucked out. We were in the right spot at the right time.
This time. Yeah, no guarantees, Jack.
You got that right. It is just a matter of time, Lawrence. You know that.
Oh, I know. But, see, the more people we have like Joyce going out and going to the city council and preparing for presentations.
Well, what do they do? Nobody believes them.
I know. It's, you know, if at first you don't succeed, try.
The day this happens and an X-flare takes out the grid or other things, people are going to go crazy. You know, those people who have been educated, their coast-to-coast listeners, they know what's going on. Maybe they'll go to their people and say, look, we've been warning you about this. Look, it's happened. And also, when the planet gets hit, it's an ongoing burst for how long? Because it will take the entire planet, won't it?
Well, it depends on the size and the trajectory. But, yeah, like the Carrington event was two blasts over the course of 3 days. And the second one was bigger than the first. Again, the nearer you are to the poles, the more vulnerable you are to the blast. We are pretty near to the North Pole. Our, you know, industrial infrastructure is definitely near the North Pole. So one could say move to the equator, but that does bring another set of problems. Like, how do you do that?
Sure does. Let's go to Cuba in New York. Hey, Cuba.
Hey, George. How are you doing?
Good.
Have you ever heard of Susan Joy Renison? She's a British physicist.
I have not. How about you, Lawrence?
No.
Okay. What's up with her?
Susan Joy Renison is a British physicist who is supposedly a metaphysical liaison to the Obama administration since 2009. And in her book, Tuning the Diamonds, she speaks about all of this and what she has relayed to them about the space weather.
So she's warned them.
Say that again?
She's warned them. She's
sent messages and she's sent as much as she could to them because she said the Obama administration in 2009 was seeking this information about planetary changes and what's going on with the weather and the electromagnetism bombardment that we've been getting. And she was just basically trying to, she put it in her book. She was talking about it, and she explained what she thinks is going on. She's a British physicist. Her name is Susan Joy Renison.
And spell that last name for me, can you?
Renison, Susan Joy Renison, R-E-N-N-I-S-O-N. She has a website, SusanRenison.com.
Okay, very good. We'll try to track her down.
I wish Obama would listen to her, because there's nothing in the smart grid proposal that I've seen that, that really takes any of this into account.
Let's grab one. Now we're not going to have time. The clock is quickly ticking. So take the time. Take the 30 seconds. Tell us about your work. You put some guts into it. Tell us where people can get it.
You can get Solar Cataclysm at Barnes & Noble, any independent bookstore, Amazon.com, any place where books are sold, it should be there.
And the other books, Aftermath, Apocalypse 2012, they still out there?
They sure are.
Excellent. And your websites. Go ahead.
LawrenceEJoseph.com. Drop by. Say hello.
What's the E stand for?
Edward.
All right.
And
my uncle's name.
And like that. But seriously, if we can get enough people just making noise about it, even just talking about it, it'll swell up, because we have to do something.
Well, that's going to happen, Lawrence, no doubt. Thank you so much. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.